And it's time to talk about consumer issues on The Larry Mueller Show. And we've got new music. Very exciting. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. Back with us from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are Michelle Reinen. She's the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Hi, Michelle. Good to see you again. And Jared Albrook is with us. He's the Senior Communications Specialist. Hi, Jared.
Good morning, Jill.
On our list of things to talk about today are fraudulent veterans charities, test prep scams, seasonal topics, and of course, always a lot more. And we want to hear from you. Are you having problems with a business? Do you think that you may have been scammed? Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Michelle, now we have scammers taking advantage of our support for veterans. What can you tell us about that?
Well, so what this is really is about Operation Donate with Honor, and it is an action that the Federal Trade Commission took in conjunction with more than 70 local state offices to bring some law enforcement actions, more than 100 law enforcement actions on veterans-related charities and fundraisers. And in the past, we've talked about your giving and having your giving plan and making sure that you do your research and know who you're giving to. And this talks about the results of some of the work that's done on the back end. So we have three different examples to kind of lend some value to the tips that we always provide on doing your research. So the first one is Help the Vets. It was operated under different names such as American Disabled Veterans Foundation, Military Families of America, Veterans Emergency Blood Bank, and Veterans Fighting Breast Cancer. And really what it is that they falsely claim to fund medical care, suicide prevention programs, retreats for veterans recuperating from stress, and veterans fighting breast cancer. But these claims were false. I mean, they falsely claimed a gold rating by GuideStar, which really provides information about nonprofits so consumers can make decisions, those sound decisions. They didn't actually help the disabled veterans, and 95% of every donation was spent on fundraising and administrative expenses, salaries, and benefits, as opposed to the work that they said they were receiving donations for. So this is that, do that research, use those tools that we've provided, Charity Navigator, give.org, checking something out with the Department of Financial Institutions, so you can see how the money is being allocated based on those reports. Don't respond to phone calls that are unsolicited, out of the blue, asking you to give. In by providing that banking information and making that donation in that moment, take that moment to pause, either disconnect the call or say, I'm interested, but send me everything in writing, and then do the research. Check those organizations out, and then also Google it on, you know, with complaints, scams, so you can find out what other people are saying about the organizations. Two more examples that we have just to really hit home with this disadvantage that was happening with consumers and the veterans, because here consumers wanted to give to help, and they're not receiving this. But Veterans of America. So Veterans of America was really a front used by an individual who sold donated cars and boats, and then they just kept the money. So in this one, they operated under that Veterans of America name, Vehicles for Veterans, Saving Our Soldiers, Donate Your Car, Donate That Car, Act of Valor, and Medal of Honor. All names one would respond to. You know, you'd really want to consider that. But the owners allegedly made millions of robocalls asking consumers to donate the automobiles, watercrafts, real estate, timeshares. But they falsely claimed that donations were tax deductible and would go to veterans' charities. And none of those names were actual real charities with tax exempt status. So now a consumer's hit twice.
Right.
Because they're not only hit on the front front end with the donation not going where they wanted it to, the veteran not receiving it, but now they have tax implications, especially if they file it as a tax-deductible donation.
And some of those can be very large. I mean, we're talking timeshares and things like that.
Right. So that can really lead to a lot of problems, you know, that you don't even know about until later. And the final one is VetNow. And this is Veterans Now. It was something actually that our Wisconsin Department of Justice and Department of Financial Institution joined 24 other states in a settlement with an Illinois-based company. It alleged of deceptive solicitations, saying that they raised nearly $2 million annually nationwide using professional telemarketers that exaggerated or misrepresented the charitable activities that were so deceiving those donors. But this starting in March of 2015, the organization raised money using these telemarketing practices and scripts, and they told donors that they gave a minimum of 12% after expenses back to the veterans in the donor's state. But in response to the state's investigation, they admitted that it had not actually funded any programs that assisted veterans in most of those states. So again, all that misrepresentation. In Wisconsin, they had raised more than $65,000 in 9 months, and most cash went to fundraisers, and less than 5% went to actual charity programs. So again, you can just see the importance of doing that research and not responding to that phone call. Those scripts said that it would be going to medical facilities and treatments, but again, it didn't go for any of that. So there was a settlement in November of 17 that was finalized and received a receiver appointed to dissolve the organization and distribute any remaining assets to two nationally recognized, well-known, respected, reputable veterans charities. Mm-hmm. So in the end, some money did end up going there, and that's a good thing with the investigation.
Okay. And which department was it that brought these charges?
So the Department of Financial Institutions in cooperation with the Department of Justice. So like we refer many of our investigations and cases to the Department of Justice, serve as our attorneys on state cases. The Department of Financial Institutions is an agency we work with regularly on a number of consumer issues, and they handle the regulation of charities. We get the scam side of it. And so since they were representing as a real charity and did some work, they handled that investigation.
So, I mean, even though it's very frustrating, we hear about all these scams, there are things being done to catch these people, to hopefully bring them to justice and get some of that money back to where it's supposed to go.
Right, absolutely. We don't always, because some of these scams are happening internationally or take years to resolve.
Right.
We're only dealing in the moment of prevention and don't respond to this phone call and hang up on that. With most of the scams we talk about, it's nice to be able to look back and give you some of those results. But then also from that, add that legitimacy to what we're saying, that these are scams. We are seeing that through the results of investigations as well. And so take those tips that we provide that you learn from friends and family and checking things out. It's important to take that moment in time to just validate what you want, the action you want to take is with a reputable company that will follow through on the claims that they've made.
Right. And most of these, you said, were phone solicitations?
Yes.
So what about the ones we get in the mail? I mean, how trustworthy are they?
Well, so exactly. You could get email and you could get mail. There are many ways to, make contact and solicit, but you still need to take that time. I mean, it's easy to do a mass mailing. It costs money, but you can certainly send that out to everyone there. And some will respond and trigger, but a lot of people are very good at just taking mail and throwing it in the circular file, if you will, and
yes,
ignoring that. But others, pile up their mail once a month, look through things, and, that's a good cause, but you still need to do the research. You have it in writing. If they provide you names, addresses, statistics, all things you can verify and validate, that's great. If you get a mailer that is very sketchy, there's no information to be had. You're going to have to research just to find out who the organization is. Those should be indicators to someone that they're not forthcoming with what they want to do. And why is that?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're really tricky, so that the names are similar to ones that you've heard of, or maybe it's a .org or .net and it's not quite right. So we really have to check.
Right. I mean, the list of names that I just went through with the cases, Help the Vets, Veterans of America, Vet Now, Veterans Now, they all have legitimate. And they all have that same twist, that mm-hmm. vet.
Yes.
So they get very confusing. Is one the same, one another? And they go by multiple names too. So how do you keep track?
Right, exactly. Okay, well, thanks for all that information. And speaking of robocalls, you know, a lot of the calls that we're getting, apparently, they're getting a little more sophisticated. And what should we know about those, Jared?
Well, robocalls are annoying for everybody, but we're
used to them coming
used to them coming in as a recording.
Yes.
That's kind of the traditional way that they come. You know, occasionally you'll get a call out of the blue from someone who's trying to pitch you something and it's an actual person on the line. Or so you would think.
Yes.
That's me raising my finger in the air. Or so you would think. So we're in an age now where artificial intelligence is just going to start driving a lot of calls that we're receiving. It's going to come from scammers. It's going to be in interactions we're having with businesses for Q&A purposes or for support services with products or services. So, you know, the rise of these types of things, like the personal assistants that are out there and digital translation services, all of these could lead to new types of phone calls that we're just not used to. And you see examples. You can even go online and search for, like on YouTube, you can see videos of people interacting with robots, and they're very, very great conversations that they're having, theoretically.
Yes.
So the thing is if you get an unsolicited call and it's not a clearly automated call, it's not a canned recording, It may make some people more trusting because they think they're engaging with a person. They may not be. These computers keep getting better and better and better. So the trick really is what it always is for robocalls or any unexpected call. Just let them go to voicemail or install call blocking apps and watch for spoofed numbers and just, you know, any kind of strange interactions or, you know, answers you're not expecting or answers that are not getting to the point. Those are types of things you see in these interactions with robots. So one more weird thing we have to start looking out for as a society. But
oh, yes. Yeah. There's always one more. And speaking of spoofing and robocalls, Anne from Madison had a question regarding robocalls during election time. She got several calls from a Louisville state senator with a callback number for a 502 Louisville, Kentucky area code. But the caller ID indicated it was a 414 Milwaukee area code. And she says she assumed getting the calls was an error. But why would a candidate use an area code faking? Is that any type of violation?
So we're going to break this down into a few different parts. First of all, election calls, political calls are not covered by the Do Not Call list. Those
right.
are exempt from the telemarketing laws. They're trying to get your vote, but they're not officially selling a good or service there. The other piece of it is spoofing. So that is misrepresenting on the caller ID what the phone number is or who is calling. But we can't be certain that that's what's happened here because they left a message, they left a callback number if you're interested, and it didn't match what was on the caller ID. But the candidate certainly could have used a telemarketing bank or a phone bank to be making the calls. And the call could have really originated from a 414 area code or line that was given to them from the telecommunications carrier, or they could have gotten a card. It sounds as though they may have been making those calls in error, and there might be a similar area code in Louisville that they were trying to reach and had some errors there. But at this point, we can't say that the caller ID was necessarily faked because we don't know the source of who was making the calls. If it really came from the senator's office and his phone line at 502, then yes, but they certainly could have hired someone to make those calls.
Yeah, always so many things that could be affecting.
Right. I mean, they could have had a volunteer using their own cell cell phone as well, and they could have moved from Wisconsin down there. I mean, we'd have to look into it to know.
Sure. Okay, great. Our guests today are from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Jared Albrecht is the Senior Communications Specialist. Our on-air producer today is Natalie Guyette, and Tyler Ditter is our board operator. Do you have a problem you need help with? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about consumer issues today with Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht. And you can join in. We have a lot of open lines, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Michelle, more and more people are just asking for gift cards when they call and ask you to pay something and what have you. What should we look for on these?
Well, first I want to give our tagline, and I'll repeat it again, but gift cards are for giving. They are not for making payments. If we can have everyone remember that, and really in an emotional response when you get one of these threatening phone calls, keep that in mind so you can just disconnect. We've been talking about how when you are asked to wire money or pay by gift cards, it's an indicator that it's a scam and to just hang up. It's exciting. We now have data to back that up.
And
yeah, usually data is pretty boring, but this is pretty fascinating and incredible. So since 2015, there has been a 270% increase in the amount of scams and frauds that actually ask that a consumer pay by gift card. And this data is from the Federal Trade Commission. And so what we've also seen, what that really means is that in 2018 alone, from January to September, consumers have already lost $53 million this year by paying by gift card for these scams. They'd paid that reached $40 million in 2017 and $20 million in 2015. And $27 million in 2016. So it's growing every year.
Yeah.
We're already at $53 million. So we really need to pay attention to this. What we've seen from the reports to date is that iTunes is the leader as far as what the scam artists want by 23%. And then next comes in with Google Play at 18%, and then followed by MoneyPack, Amazon, and Steam. All things to keep in mind when you get one of these calls and are asked to do that. We've talked about it with the IRS scam, utilities, grandparent scams, you know, add some of these sweepstakes items in there and more. But we've also heard the stories that say where the caller stayed on the line with the scammer, went to Walmart, bought the gift cards. The scammer never let them off the call.
No.
Well, so this data also shows from these reports that, yes, it's the Walmart, Target, Walgreens, and CVS are the most popular stores the scam artists are routing you to in order to go buy the gift cards as well. So, again, gift cards are for giving. They're not for making payment. And you shouldn't be solicited to make a payment using one of those. And this data validates that. For anyone who needs data to believe what we're saying, or, you know, to validate what we're hearing in the reports and the scam artists there. But it's important to listen to this data, because millions of dollars already this year.
That's incredible. Those statistics are just amazing. And share that with people. Share it with your friends and family. So if they're not listening to this or listening to other things, they know the gift card is not for paying something. So, yeah, keep that in mind, everybody. Well, let's go to the phone lines now. We've got a lot of people waiting. We've got Ron in La Crosse first. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I get a lot of these calls from these third-party professional fundraisers, and, of course, I'm up to speed on them. I ask, well, how many cents of every dollar that you do collect goes to the charity, and how much does your organization pocket? And sometimes it's as much as 85 cents of every dollar goes to the fundraiser, or even 90. And when they give the answer, they do a percentage breakdown, but sometimes the syntax seems to be arranged to deceive me into thinking it's vice versa. And my other question, well, my question is, are there any states where these, basically, they used to call them boiler room operations. Are there any states where this is outlawed? You would think it'd be outlawed in Wisconsin. And I doubt very much they could get away with this in any country in Europe. So I'll wait for a comment here.
Thank you, Ron. Michelle?
So Ron makes a really good point. The way that they just changed their syntax to deceive you into misunderstanding the information that they're providing. You know, he's asking all the right questions we want someone to ask. How much of the money actually goes to the cause versus administrative or salaries or benefits? But then they're going to respond in a way that's going to make it look all good for them or confuse. So definitely something to watch out for and monitor and make them repeat it and go, no, this, how much is administrative, you know, percentage, if you don't like the answer you're getting. But as it relates to what's regulated, so we have the Do Not Call law that's in place for solicitations, and the Department of Financial Institutions registers and regulates the charitable activities. But as far as those that deceive or misrepresent and aren't registered to do that work, we just talked at the top of the show about some of the activities and enforcement activities that go. But boiler rooms by definition or as a whole, not outlawed in that manner, but it's the activity that they're doing and how they're conducting or deceiving. So certainly file complaints, check them out, report those organizations that aren't operating in an appropriate manner so they can be looked at.
And part of the time, we don't know if the person you're talking to is actually telling you the truth anyway about mm-hmm. how much. So you should maybe verify with a third party.
Right, absolutely. Do that research. Check that give.org. Check the Department of Financial Institutions on their website under the charitable organizations to see those percentages, and charitynavigator.org as well.
Okay, great. Thanks for that call again, Ron. We appreciate that. Next up, we have Pat in Waukesha. Hi, Pat. Pat, are you there? Oh, there you are. Hi, Pat.
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
I have a question. We've been receiving calls that say our first name and last name and our phone number.
So you're getting the calls from you, basically?
Well, yeah, but it's not from us.
Right. No, I understand that.
Calling.
That's a new one. Jared, have you heard of anything like that?
It just seems like a variation on some of the things we talk about here with neighbor spoofing.
Mm-hmm.
So these scammers have the ability to use technology to make your caller ID say whatever they want it to say. And this kind of new style of spoofing where they make that caller ID read the way they want it to, that's been given the title neighbor spoofing, is where they'll use your local area code to make you think that it is a call that you need to be picking up. I've said before that I have an old cell phone from when I lived in Chicago. So if I get a call from 312 and then the next three digits from my call, it just immediately makes me think that it's something that pertains to me, even though that was years ago.
Right.
And it's never something I need to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
If they have the ability in their computer systems to auto-dial these calls and to choose the area code, they can just have the computer systems dial back, theoretically, the number that they're calling. Just have it read that in the caller ID. So, you know, I'm sure that they just have them set up that way in their auto-dialing systems. And that's not to say that that's right and that's illegal. That's not something they should be doing. But I'm guessing that these scammers, when they set up their computer operations, are just telling the system, hey, you know, display the number I'm calling. And, you know, certainly that's going to trigger someone to wonder what's going on and maybe pick up the call.
So technology these days can do amazing things, good and bad, and this is one of the bad ones.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, next up we have Carol in De Pere. Hi, Carol. What can we help you with?
Yes, my question concerns these Medicare supplement plans. I get all kinds of calls from I think it's just one or two people. I usually just pick up the phone and then immediately cut off from the call. But why are they allowed to do this repeatedly to people?
Okay, thank you, Carol. You know, we hear that a lot, Michelle. Why are they able to do this?
Well, so right now we're in the Medicare open enrollment, and it's an opportunity for consumers to decide if they want to make a change in the plan that they have. So it's also an opportunity where these private organizations are going to reach out to try and get new business from accounts that they don't currently have. And again, it is private companies that offer the different Medicare Advantage, Medigap plans, as opposed to the government providing any agents or sales representatives out there. So they are doing these solicitations. Now, there are specific criteria under the Medicare program for making solicitations. And if you ask not to be called anymore, that should be honored. So report those things to Consumer Protection. If you're on Do Not Call and you're receiving calls, report that to Consumer Protection so we can look at it as it relates to our regulations and those issued by the federal government as it relates to the Medicare program, and we'll work with them as well. But the way that they get names is certainly through different lead lists. There are opportunities to buy those marketing tools out there, and then that's that target marketing piece that many businesses, use to gain advantages type situations. So ways to stop it, tell them to remove your name from the list and then report that to Consumer Protection. And you can do that by calling 1-800-422-7128.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, if you want to join the conversation, have a question, we have some open lines, 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to us. It's ideas@wpr.org. Let's kind of change things a little bit and talk about selling cars online. It's kind of, whenever we do that, it's full of challenges, obviously, but apparently now there's kind of a new twist to that. Jared, I think you can tell us about that
one,
right?
Yeah, I can. Mm-hmm. So the Federal Trade Commission recently warned people about this new car sales scam. This was certainly something I hadn't heard about myself. Basically, what's happening is people are trying to sell their cars online and maybe through a Craigslist or some other sort of site,
right?
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
A phony buyer will contact that seller and will tell them, I'm interested in your car, but I need to see the vehicle history report. And instead of asking for something what we know, like, say, a Carfax, mm-hmm. they'll say, I need you to go to order it from whatever website for, say, $20, right? So you, as the seller, go to the website and you enter your contact information, your credit card information, and you supposedly buy this history,
mm-hmm.
and then you report it back to the buyer, you send it to them, and then you never hear back again. Well, then the question is, okay, well, you're likely just out $20, but you've also turned over your credit card information, you've also turned over personal information,
yes.
and you also are probably not going to be selling your car to this person. And one thing that's kind of interesting also about this operation that they mentioned is a lot of the reports that they've gotten from at the FTC about this have people telling you to get these vehicle history reports from websites that end in .vin, which is smart because it's the VIN number for your car, right?
Right, yes.
Well, it's not. Those .vin website URLs were technically earmarked for wine-related websites.
As in vintners.
Right, right. So, so clearly if someone is going to ask you to go find a credit report a car history report from some site you've never heard from before, and it ends in .vin, it's probably a pretty good indication that you're dealing with someone you don't want to hear. So, ask them why you would need to get something from a specific site and think twice about it, because it's just nothing about that rings true.
Isn't it usually the buyer who's getting the Carfax information rather than the seller?
You would go seek it out yourself, or you'd make a payment to get that. Or if you're buying from a dealership, a lot of times they'll make it available as a service to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Bob waiting. He's in Clay Banks. Hi, Bob.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. What's your question?
A couple things. One thing, I've been hearing ads for companies that will help people with IRS problems and claiming that they can save all kinds of money for them. I was wondering how legal that is for them to offer that. Can you hear me?
Yep, go. Yep, go ahead. So you're just wondering if those are correct, those are legitimate businesses? Is that what your question is?
If they legally can sell their services like that, it seems like that should be something that's available from the IRS directly and at no extra cost to the people.
Okay. Yeah, Michelle, we've heard those ads before. You know, you owe them $100,000 and we can get it for 10. Is that
right.
legitimate?
Well, and so oftentimes if you have a problem with your taxes and you've used a tax preparer, you have the option of checking on the bottom of your taxes before you file it, whether or not anyone can talk to the government about those taxes in your place to represent you, really. And so, sure, you're buying a representation service like an attorney or, in this case, maybe a negotiator who understands tax law, your accountant may be. So it really depends on exactly what they're advertising and saying that they will do, and then do they have the credentials or backing they say they have to do that? So if there's something that's in question with a particular company that you are thinking about doing business with, always check them out ahead of time to see if there's any complaints with consumer protection, and then always check them online as well. But then, you know, document in your agreement what it is they say they are going to do for how much money it is that they're going to charge you to do that service. And then if at all you question that or it's not happening as disclosed to you, file that complaint with Consumer Protection so we can take a look at the ad and the agreement that you have with them.
Okay. And I think that Bob also had a second question about gift certificates. Is that right, Bob?
Yes, I was wondering if a business can put an expiration date on a gift certificate.
So under federal law, gift cards can't expire within 5 years from the date that they were activated, and it generally limits inactivity fees on gift cards. There are certain circumstances, such as if there's been no transaction for at least 12 months, but all that needs to be disclosed and told. Many of the very large national companies have forever gift cards as it relates. There are exceptions. If it's a donation made for like an auction or a charitable event, then if the company is donating a certificate for that, they can put an expiration date on that. But in the purchasing of gift cards, there's usually nothing for the first 5 years.
Okay. So basically, if they've got an expiration date on the gift certificate, then it's probably correct, or?
Well, is it less than 5 years, then mm-hmm. you need to contact Consumer Protection,
okay.
unless, of course, it's been purchased or received through an auction. So if you receive one as a gift from someone and it expires within a year, well, when did they buy it? Or the second part is, did they get it through an auction for a charitable thing, and so therefore it could expire.
Okay, great. We're looking at consumer problems today with Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Do you have a question for them? Give us a call. We have open lines, 1-800-642-1234, and you can send the email to ideas@wpr.org. Now, a lot of times you said when you want to check out a company, you should, you know, check out the company. Where do they go to do that?
So you can contact Consumer Protection at 1-800-422-7128. If you call between 7:45 and 4:30, we have staff there, and you just provide them with the name of the company that you want to inquire about to see if we have any complaints, and they'll look in our database for the last 3 to 4 years and let you know. Otherwise, you can always send us an email, and we'll respond that way as well. If you have other questions, want our fact sheets, materials, publication orders, you can go to our website at datcp.wi.gov, and you can find many resources. We don't have the ability for you to do the search on company complaint history on our website, so that would be one thing. You do need to contact us either by email or phone. If you know, our office hours don't work for you, certainly leave a message after hours and we'll respond the next business day. And, you know, we'll leave it on your answering machine back, the information.
All right. What a great service. Thank you. And speaking of websites, you know, we had Pat email to ask if there were any websites to use to look up a phone number that you don't recognize. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of reverse lookup. I mean, you could go to reverse lookup. You can go to white pages, but you can just put the phone number in and type the word scam or complaint with it as well. And you could get a whole bunch of results and see what's recently circulating. We really encourage consumers to report to us the phone numbers that they are receiving solicitations from that are showing up on their caller ID related to a number of these scams. We report all of our complaint data and phone number data to the Federal Trade Commission. They create daily blacklists that are available for these caller ID blocking apps that they're constantly updating to help minimize the amount of calls that are connected through your phone. So it's this whole everybody contributing. One of the reasons why they are changing up numbers so quickly, but obviously we're aggravating them by making them do that as well. So let's keep up that good fight.
Right. And we did have another email from Elizabeth. She's apparently received on her phone a call on her phone or message asking for her to consider giving donations to veterans, to the DAV, Disabled American Veterans. Is this a scam? And where can, I mean, there's going to be a lot of varieties of this. Where can people go to actually find out what names are fraudulent, Jared?
For starters, they can, like Michelle's suggested a couple times here, they could just Google the name with the word scam or you know, something of that variation. But this goes back to Michelle's point about researching. So some of the best resources that we have out there are charitynavigator.org. It's a great website for finding out about these charities and also finding out some of the details about how they use that money. And give.org is another really great one. And then, you know, you can check with the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions to see if they're regulated in this or are registered to be a charity in the state. But, you know, this is maybe also one of those things where the best thing you can do is if it's a very close name to an organization you're familiar with, call the organization directly. With a number that you know is legitimate, and ask them. I mean, if they're collecting solicitations, they would be happy to take one directly from you without going through the system. So yeah, just do whatever research you can, and just, you know, contact the charity directly and just work through it that way.
Okay, great tip. Thank you. We are talking about fraud and scams and looking at consumer problems today. Do you think you may have been scammed? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau filling in for Larry today. I hope you can join us tomorrow. Lisa Johnson is going to be back to talk about fall mums and what to expect from trees and shrubs that were submerged in all that water this year. And of course, take your gardening questions. Join us at 11 or catch the first hour again at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. Or you can always go online and listen on our archives. And right now we are talking about consumer problems. We did have someone who called in earlier to say that they got a call from someone who said that they were the sheriff and that they missed jury duty. You guys have heard this before. Jared, what's the deal on that?
Yeah, that's a pretty traditional imposter scam right there. Looks like, the person had said that the caller had a southern accent, told him that they had missed jury duty, and I think that they were at risk of being arrested for it. So if they're claiming to be with your local sheriff's department, hang up the phone. The sheriff's department is not actually going to call you and make a threat by the phone like that.
They got better things to do.
That's right. Hang up the phone, call the sheriff's department directly, and let them know about it, because there's likely, if you got that call, it's likely that there are other folks in the same area that are probably going to be getting a similar call as well. So the sheriff's department should know about that in the first place.
So you haven't missed jury duty. You're good.
No. Very traditional imposter scam where someone calls claiming to be with the government or a well-known business and making a threat, looking for money, typically with those gift cards we talked about earlier, the iTunes and the Google Plays.
Because, you know, the sheriff department really likes to use iTunes.
Love it.
And so
they love it.
It's helpful to them. you know, this is a time when students are thinking about taking those college entrance exams like the SAT or the PSAT. And the competition is fierce, and they're all trying to get a step up. And of course, they're looking at trying to get helps, parents, students, whatever, you know, getting help to prepare for those. What do they need to be aware of so that they're not scammed by some of these people?
Well, so there is a warning out for parents as it relates to this, because there are scammers making contact, claiming to be with the College Board, and that's the organization that's responsible for the PSAT and the SAT tests. So what they're doing is they're calling and or emailing you and asking for the credit card number so that they can send the prep materials out for the student. And they're saying that the student has supposedly requested these materials. So if mom and dad are on the student to get prepared for the test, this could, you know, put some legitimacy behind the call and make you go, oh yeah, okay, I better make that payment. But often what is happening is that the scammers do have the student's name, address, phone number. So again, all adding legitimacy and making it seem believable. But what's happened is the student hasn't actually asked for this material. They haven't listened to mom and dad. No, not going on this yet.
Wow, what a shock.
And it's not the College Board making these phone calls. So they will never ask for a credit card, bank account, or password information by phone or email. Before you ever give out your money or personal information, it's the theme of the day, research the company that's offering these test prep materials and search for them online with that scam or complaint word, and check with other parents and students. But the guidance counselors, the school counselors,
yes,
are such a very valuable resource to be checking with them on how best to prepare for these exams. And usually the schools provide materials on how best to prepare. So using that connection will be of tremendous value. But consider how you pay. Remember, the gift cards are not for payment. They're for giving. Second theme of the day. And then that we don't like to wire money to people we don't know as well. So use that credit card if you are ever considering making these payments, because there's those built-in fraud protections. There's a way to track it if it turns out to be a scam. So there's something for us to follow and investigate as well. And if it turns out to be that scam, there could be a way for you to get your money back, as opposed to those other things. It's just gone. It vanishes.
Gone. Yeah, totally. Okay, great. Thank you. And we're going to go right to the phones. But before we do that, we do have a couple of open lines. So give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Aaron in Appleton. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
What do you have for us?
I was just curious that if your guests were aware, and if they could comment on if they've heard of scam baiters. There's essentially an online community. I work as a systems analyst, and the online community on forums on Reddit or websites or YouTube channels where these people with technical skills will actually post phone numbers that or IP addresses of these illegal scammers, and then take that information and either, you know, try to do a deny of service of attack or take down their connection, or even just waste their time by forwarding their calls to chatbots or something along those lines, so they're just wasting time for an hour and a half. You can't scam somebody else, kind of thing.
Have you heard of those?
Well, so I have seen different variations, and I believe one of the national nightly news is within the last week or so, a couple weeks, did a very nice story about some of these tech groups that are trying to fight back with these callers and scam operations as well, and doing this data bank to shut them down. And I don't know if that's the exact one he's referring to, but there's a number of groups out there, as well as it's some of the same work that our investigators do as well. When we receive consumer complaints, when we see particular posts, we work with the different providers to help shut down some of these sources or websites, or in some cases put injunctives and directives out there to cease the operation because of the activity in the Federal Trade Commission doing the same thing. So yes, people are trying to combat this at many different levels through government, as well as individual activities and in different tech support groups. We're all trying to find the right solution to put a stop to some of these pop-up scams.
Okay. Well, thank you for suggesting that, Aaron. We appreciate that. Next up, we have Andrea in Madison. Hi, Andrea. What's your question?
Hi. Well, I was listening to the discussion about the gift card scams, and it occurs to me that the sellers of the gift cards, why wouldn't they just post something about the scam alert, or maybe have a conversation with people or notify people who are buying gift cards of the scams? Because not everybody listens to public radio and hears these types of discussions and has that benefit of being aware. And if at the source of making the purchases, they may have something advising them that these scams are occurring.
Okay. All right, Andrea. Thanks for that suggestion. Michelle, I think your suggestion should be that everybody listens to WPR.
Okay. Well, I'll go with that.
Besides that.
Fabulous
and
suggestion. But no, this is actually something that some stores are doing. So some we've seen in the past, especially during the holidays, some have posted at the gift card purchase point where they say, is this for a gift or are you making a payment? You know, be alert to scams. And then others, some clerks are seeing that, oh, 500, is this, who is this for? But what's happening is the scam artists are sometimes on the phone still with the person that they've made the call with, and they are telling them the storyline to give the clerk. You know, we've certainly seen where it's a grandparent scam. The scammer's still on the phone with the senior who's there. Oh, it's a gift for my grandson. His birthday's coming up and I want him to be able to buy XYZ. You know, so if they're hooked in that far, that's hard. It's also, you know, not to give excuses, it can be hard for some of these stores to question a purchase,
right,
and upset their customer, mm-hmm, type situation. So there is a balancing act, but many have really stepped up to put signage, to make people stop and think, train their clerks to ask a simple question to get people to stop. As it relates to wiring money with bank tellers, there's a task force that's working on elder abuse, and with the Wisconsin Bankers Association created a new training video on YouTube to train the tellers to recognize some of these things when people come in to make these unusual large monetary transfers, you know, $500,000, and that's not their normal pattern, $10,000 for some of these scams. So yes, we are trying to work on all fronts. I don't disagree with the statement, but really it comes down to talking about them, questioning them, and getting the word out. So at any social gathering that you're at, you know, bring it up, get everybody on board, and sure, everyone should listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yes. Well, and we're getting to the season where there are going to be a lot of social gatherings. So how difficult would it be to bring it up? You know, I just heard something on the radio the other day. Did you know? Yeah. So it's a good time to be doing that.
Well, and you're coming into the season where there's going to be a lot of gift card purchases,
right,
for legitimate,
right,
reasons. So that's going to get difficult for the clerk to also start to monitor as well. But when you're getting into $500 on iTunes, that's kind of hard to spend.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And let's go get some emails here. We had Deb email in, and she said that she was on a dating site for a couple of months when a person she was communicating with started asking her to send him money. He requested she send him $3,500, and she told him more than once that she did not have the money. And he did keep up the request for about 2 weeks, then stopped emailing her. She did report him to the dating site, but is there anything else that she should do?
First of all, it's really nice to see that she recognized this for what it is.
Right.
Whether she had the money or not, she decided that this was not someone that she wanted to be sharing that kind of money with. And because the story sounded suspect, very, very standard dating scam here, or sweetheart scam, it's mm-hmm. often referred to, where you start a supposed relationship, the people start asking you for small sums of money, and then they just keep asking and asking and asking for travel, or they're in trouble, they need money, or they'd like to come visit you, but they need their passport renewed, and any reason they can come up with, right? I just wonder if she's been on the site for a little bit and communicating with this person for a couple of weeks, what else she may have shared. So I would think she should probably check her credit report just in case, and maybe think about putting a credit freeze on her accounts just in case. She's reported it to the website. What else are we thinking here?
Anything stand out to you, Michelle?
Well, there's been no transfer of money in reporting to the website. You can also sometimes share this information with law enforcement if they are tracking. I think IC3 takes these reports for the cybercrime aspects of things to report. So this profile would be known as well if she's willing to do that. So an additional reporting source.
Okay. And again, the credit freeze, how do people get that? And it's free now.
Yeah. The easiest way to do it is to go to the websites for Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. They each had to make new pages to make that as easy as possible for folks to do.
Okay.
There's a lot of information about credit freezes on our website at datcp.wi.gov. And someone could also, if they had questions, call our hotline at 800-422-7128. I think it's just important for her to just keep a look out on mailing she gets or credit information, anything that comes through, to make sure there's nothing weird coming up in the future.
Sure.
Here.
Be alert.
Yeah.
And then just one quick more email before we have to go to the news. Jim emailed, he said he's getting calls of recorded message concerning his Medicare account that asks you to dial 1 to speak to a representative or 9 to cancel. And he's left them to go to voicemail as he does not recognize the phone number. Is he handling it right?
He sure is. So usually those are lead generators, especially when they just ask you to press numbers. But Medicare really wants to know about the different scams that are going on during this open enrollment season. So the additional thing that he can do if he has the phone numbers from his caller ID is report this to the Medicare authorities at 1-800-MEDICARE.
1-800-MEDICARE. Okay. So if you got that, Jim, go ahead and give him a call. We've been talking with our regular guest from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Jared Albrecht is the Senior Communications Specialist. They're going to be back to take more questions and give us some tips on staying scam-free over the holidays right after this look at the news. You are listening to The Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're taking calls about consumer problems today. Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are with us. Do you have a question about a possible scam or a consumer issue? Give us a call. We have open lines, 1-800-642-1234. And you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we had some notification, we did here, you had at your agency, regarding a issue called the Secret Sister Gift Exchange. Michelle, can you explain that a little bit?
Well, I can certainly try. So Secret Sister Gift Exchange is on Facebook, and it's actually a returning scam in essence, in that it was around in 2015 and I'm sure has laid dormant or very quiet anyway. And the U.S. Postal Inspection Service had done advisories out in 2015 about it. What it is it's a gift exchange that's circulating, as I said, on Facebook, where users are asked to send a gift valued at $10 or more to their secret sister. And then it promises that you will receive up to 36 presents in return. And so while this seems like a really good way to spread some holiday cheer, it's really a scam. It comes down to being a pyramid scheme,
right?
Which is an illegal activity in the United States. So they are technically illegal gambling rings when you participate, and they could be subject to penalties for mail fraud. So you don't want to start messing with the Postal Inspection Service there. But whether this happens by mail or social media, if money or other items of value are requested with assurances of some kind of sizable return, those who participate are involved in that illegal activity, that pyramid scheme. So how it works is that the consumer purchases one gift for a stranger, and then that person will receive as many as 36 gifts in return. The type of gift exchange might seem really reasonable in theory, but the math doesn't work out. So six friends invite six more friends, and they all send gifts to the participants in that spot one of the pyramid. And then before that person's name is removed, and that happens before the person's name is removed. So then the process repeats itself, and now we're at the level two spot and so on. But because it forms this pyramid, the top comes out very well, yeah. But the bottom can't support the weight and it falls apart before everything does it. So while you might get the 6 to 36, most people get nothing in exchange, and it gets all caught up. And usually you see these as they relate to financial transactions and not just gifts. So people, oh, big deal.
Right.
But what you're not thinking about here is that you're handing out personal information in order to get your gift back and to participate. So it's more than just the gift or the money. It's your personal information with these strangers and the fact that now you're using the mail to participate in an illegal activity, and hence in walks the U.S. Postal Inspection Service. So you need to step away from these chain letter-like things, mail, emails, and social medias, and just ignore them. And if you want to do a gift swap, get your circle of friends together and draw your names
person,
and have a
yes.
nice time there, because holiday cheer is a good thing.
Now, what's the difference between these kind of pyramid schemes and businesses that rely on recruiting salespeople? I think a lot of us have seen this for, you know, makeup or what have you, where there's someone on the top gets a portion of the sales. How's that different, Michelle?
Oh, you're getting into some real technical law here now, but it's good. I mean, it is things that the Federal Trade Commission and we break down on a regular basis, and some of it's the definition, but you have to look at, is there a true good or service that you are selling mm-hmm. and providing? And what percentage of the business plan actually makes up the sale of that good or service versus just the recruit and you making profit on engaging more recruits? So is there a viable business plan that may involve recruits, but there's true product and sales that are happening and you get commission, versus the whole business plan is about more recruits and investment by them and then it falls apart that way? So it gets into a lot of math and analysis and business planning, but you're right. You see organizations, but they have product. You see the party, you see the product, you see people coming, buying things, walking away, and not becoming recruits.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's all about recruits, even though it's just what looks like a gift exchange, it's not.
Okay, so that's the key, is there an actual product? Okay, great. We did have a caller who just wanted to raise awareness of something. She is blind, and when people give out alphabetic phone numbers, it's very difficult to figure out which numbers the letters correspond with. And I know I don't have a problem with my sight, but I have a problem with those names too. So that's just something, just as something to throw out there for people when they're giving names. And Jared, we had given one earlier, I believe.
Yeah, I thought back, and I think the only one we've given today was 1-800-MEDICARE, which would also be 1-800-633-4227.
One more time?
800-633-4227.
Okay, thank you for that, because that's really a good point. We also had an email from John wondering if there is still a limited time frame during the year to sign up for the Do Not Call list. He was also wondering if that restriction was imposed by the legislature to reduce the number of people signing up. What's going on with that Do Not Call list?
So the Do Not Call list is permanent. If you were on it last month, you're on it this month, you're on it till you take yourself off of it. That changed in, I think, August of 2014. So
it's
we're going
while.
Into 4 years where it's been permanent. He's certainly remembering when you had to renew every 2 years to maintain. It didn't have to do when that was imposed in the law, the way that it was written, it wasn't about reducing the number of people signing up. It had to do with maintaining the validity of the list and making sure that people still wanted to not receive calls and that phone numbers weren't changing and becoming invalid and telemarketers had good data to go. But with portability and people keeping their phone numbers forever, that's really changed. So it's permanent. If you can check by calling from the phone number you want on the list to make sure you're on the list, is how you go about doing that.
Okay. And is there a separate list for a full U.S. and then a state?
No, you register with the Federal Trade Commission, and then once you are registered there, Wisconsin uses our area codes from that list to regulate our state law. So you can go to 1-888-382-1222 to register or verify, or go to donotcall.gov.
.gov. Okay, great. Thank you. And let's go right to the phones now. We have Paula in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, my question is in regard to the coupon carts that are sold by the athletes that live in our area. They sell them for $20. They're about the size of a credit card, and they, on both sides, have little squares with discounts at the local establishment.
Uh-huh.
One of the squares is a $5 off square for a purchase, I believe over $50, at one of the local chain grocery stores, the Wisconsin chain store, and they will not honor their square on the card anymore because they're blaming the store changing hands.
Okay. Thank you, Paula. Is that a legitimate...
If there is new ownership, yes, that can be a possibility, that coupon is no longer valid if it wasn't transferable, but certainly worth filing a complaint with us about, so we could reach out to the store and get that official position broadly and also look at the contract or the transfer to see how that works. But it's like buying a gift card or a different coupon club. You buy it, it's good for as long as that store is open or owned or doesn't change hands, and the new owners don't necessarily have to honor what the old ones offered.
Mm-hmm. But it might be good for customer service, the thing to think about. Thank you for bringing that up, Paula, and call the number, and hopefully you can get help there. Next up, we've got Jan in Madison. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
What can we help you with today?
I was listening to you talk about the Facebook scam and the tiered marketing, or whatever you want to call it, issue with getting money and gifts from other people. And I have found that my grandson, my 12-year-old grandson, who is sometimes online on a phone, will be asked by a website or whatever to give personal information. And he has done that and given our home address and phone number and all that. He obviously doesn't have credit card information. But how are you addressing this? This is great for people who are older, can listen to NPR and all that. But how are you able to communicate all of this to kids at the school level? And is there a way for us to do that? Or do you have any paperwork that we can get for the schools in order to ask them to make this a priority? Because we are in an internet age, and kids as young as 5 or 6 years old are actually using the online services.
All right, thanks, Jan. Michelle?
Yeah, so one of the things that we have done this fall is to work with the colleges, and we regularly work with the schools in getting information out. Basically, not about this specific scam, you know, we issue consumer alerts on all scams, but also about just making sure that we can distribute information to our new consumers. And so we had kind of a small education, a media graphic campaign where we worked with the universities to get messages out as they could as well. And the other piece that we do is we have all this ID theft information on our website. So she she can certainly go grab any of our fact sheets, share them. But we put different articles in school newsletters on identity theft as well. And those are newsletters that go home to the parents and the kids. We have a number of school districts that want to participate in that as well. And then during our cybersecurity campaign in October, we also promoted the FBI has developed a free computer literacy program called Safe Online Surfing, or SOS, that teachers and administrators can use the program at school, or parents can use it with their children at home to help teach some of these online safety messages, not distributing information. So grades 3 through 8 are its target. They have it available in Spanish as well. I know Jared's played on it as a as an old child.
No, learned a lot.
You learned a lot. Okay, good.
But the thing that a parent can do to help protect their child if they make these judgment calls that aren't necessarily what we want is freeze their credit report. So we just talked earlier how it is free. Consumers can freeze their credit report. It's free for parents to freeze minors' credit reports, those 16 and under, and that will help protect them from identity theft. Now, and then they can transfer the freeze as an adult to themselves with the PIN and the password. But it's one way to help provide that safety net, but you need to have the conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So we are trying with many prongs. As much assistance as Jan can give us, we'll take.
Okay, sounds good.
And I don't think that we shared that website for mini games was sos.fbi.gov.
Okay, sos.fbi.gov.
Yeah, it's a good little website, actually. Mm-hmm. Some
sounds
neat
like
programming
it.
Going on there.
Yeah, so, I mean, parents, grandparents need to take a little responsibility in educating as well. So there again, as we had spoken earlier about holiday gatherings, perfect time. You know, we always think about older folks getting scammed. It's not necessarily the case. Younger kids, college kids, they get scammed all the time.
Well, we think of them as being so tech savvy,
right?
And they are. They can pick up a device and use it very quickly, and I see how my brain slows down on that. I get more hesitant. But yes, do they know what decisions to make when they know how to function with that tool so quickly? And that's why we're seeing those 20-year-olds with that 40% scam rate, because they're new consumers and understanding that we don't pay by gift card. We pay by writing out a check or transferring, doing an electronic deposit or transfer of money. The utility company doesn't call and ask for a gift card. So there's still a lot of education to be done on that side of things.
That's right. No matter your age, you can get scammed. Thank you, Jan. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jeanette in Waukesha. Hi, Jeanette.
On the technical end of things, in the past month, about a third of the calls that I've left to the answering machine were from Microsoft Security about that they are getting illegal notifications of unauthorized user on my computer.
Yes, we've heard that a lot before, haven't we?
Yeah, that's please don't take any action on those calls. Those are those imposter scams we talked about earlier, where someone claims to be with a government or a well-known business. Microsoft tech support scams go back a number of years. They may claim to be with Symantec or Adobe or some other well-known name, but typically they say Microsoft. Microsoft will never, ever contact you directly about a supposed problem with your computer. Every single call of that nature, regardless of where they're calling from, regardless of what they tell you, is a scam, and you need to just disregard it and delete.
Basically the same thing if it pops up on your screen,
pops up
right?
on your screen is the same thing. I have a relative that almost got taken by a pop-up that said, there's a problem with your computer. You know, call this number now, and we can help you work through it. There was no legitimacy to it whatsoever.
Okay, great. Thank you for bringing that up, Jeanette. Next up, we have Lisa in Brookfield. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what's your question?
Well, I just had a comment to make, and this is a little bit of a different type of scam, but tying into the 20-year-olds kind of. Last weekend, my daughter's boyfriend's roommate up in Minneapolis had been to a bar with a bunch of friends, and they were going one direction, he was going another. He had called Uber on his phone or, you know, like messaged them to come pick him up. but he was not careful when he got into the Uber car, did not look for the Uber sign that's in the front window of the car and got in there. And he didn't realize till he got in there, but there were not just the driver, but there were two other people in the back seat. And they put a gun to him, and they took him to his ATM and had him clear out his money from there. And I guess they even had him, I think there's a $200 limit with the ATMs, but they had him call the 800 number for his ATM card and request an extension, you know, for more money. And I think, you know, he obviously, his judgment was impaired because he'd been out drinking.
Sure.
So just... kind of a different type of scam, but just reminding everybody, if they're taking Uber or Lyft, to make sure that the car is safe when they get into it, and that they have that logo or whatever, you know, in the front windshield of their car, and it matches.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Lisa, so much. Have either of you heard about this particular one, or is this a police matter, obviously, but have you heard of this happening before?
Oh, unfortunately, in different cities as you travel, you hear about these situations, and you're right, it's absolutely a law enforcement matter. I certainly hope that they contacted the authorities about it so they can investigate the activities that occurred there. But, you know, on the side of the education, it's hard to have those conversations sometimes. And she's right, if there's any impairments, but those basic steps to take to keep your own personal security there is a good conversation to have.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for bringing that up, Lisa. Now, we have a few more minutes left, but you know what we've got coming up next week is Black Friday. Of course, we go right to that, not Thanksgiving. Black Friday. We've got Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday and all those things coming up. What should we be looking for when we're spending money next weekend?
Well, so first it's looking at the ads. You know, that's what you do on Thanksgiving, right? So you look at the ads in the paper and make sure that you're paying attention to the details so you're not disappointed at the cash register. Know if there's limited quantities. Know if it's a particular color, model, style, type, so you are okay with that price point. Mm-hmm. Make sure you are comparing apples with apples when you're looking at those ads and what's all involved in the purchase. But then it's the next step. You know, if you're at the store paying attention to the signage, taking the ads with, so you can have the conversation at the register, get the manager involved if there are discrepancy issues, you know, following up with consumer protection. But the online side, all last month we had Cybersecurity Month, and we talked about the daily steps that you need to take to keep yourself safe online. And now it's time with online shopping. That device, make sure it's ready to go on Cyber Monday. So get the operating system updated. Make sure that everything is secure and your privacy settings are good, and that you have secure passwords and email accounts and two-factor authentication set. So when you transmit your data to make that big purchase, you do so securely. But what we've seen are these imposter too good to be true offers on fake websites. Mm. And we really, in all honesty, see it with jewelry and clothing and big electronic items. So watch for it's hard. Cyber Monday, Black Friday, there are a lot of really good offers and deals, and those continue. But you don't want to get trapped with a website that is really just an imposter and there are no goods or services. And so think about your payment so you have federal protection using that credit card, so we have things to follow there.
Okay, lots of really good advice, because there are going to be a lot of people buying. And also remember that Saturday is for small businesses.
Small business, you got to get out and shop small businesses. We have Giving Tuesday that follows there. So it's a whole week of spending.
It is. So yeah, just, you know, be careful. That's all. Have a good time and be careful.
Right.
Our guests today are with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Jared Albrecht is the Senior Communications Specialist. They're going to be back with us on December 6th, so that's coming up. Thank you both for being here. Hope you can join us tomorrow for Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson will be back with us. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.